You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs program for Land's Sake. I'm Bill Kite, your host. Today we have with us Karen Teague, Executive Director of Independence Pass Foundation since April 2015 and President of the Board of Directors of Wilderness Workshop. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you, Bill. Wonderful to be here.
Glad you could make it today. You are also an outdoor adventurer, a former environmental lawyer, a human being passionate about wild places and our place in the wildness. Where do we start?
Well, I think it all starts 24 years ago when I moved here. I was living a very different life before the Roaring Fork Valley. I was a corporate lawyer. I had gone to an Ivy League school where I had studied Russian and was going to be a diplomat. I was going to live in a big city. I had very different plans for myself. 24 years ago, I was fortunate enough to pay a visit to Aspen, Colorado. I fell in love with the place and moved here not knowing a soul. And not only that, I didn't ski. I didn't climb mountains. And I knew nothing about wildflowers or botany or the landscape here. So I really have, for the second half of my life, I've had the great delight and privilege to be really a beginner at all these things again, and to come to know and love this place as kind of a rebirth.
You're also a published nature writer, are you not, and photographer?
I am. I say that very modestly. and it's only really because I have such a wonderful subject matter here. I am passionate about the mountains and wildflowers, and I am a self-taught, I'd say almost expert at this point, when it comes to wildflowers. And I've had an opportunity at different times, especially when I was raising little kids, to write about these subjects. I've written for the Aspen Times. I did a column in Bloom for several years, which was a lot of fun. And, you know, mostly I just have enjoyed wandering. And when I get a chance to write about it, that's a real delight.
And having kids does make a difference in your life, doesn't it? You think more, I think, about the future and about their place on the planet, don't you?
Absolutely. That's a lot of why I think many of us in the environmental community are doing what we do. I think we feel strongly that this is, you know, we have no greater responsibility really than to leave this place at least as good as we found it. I'm not sure we can turn back the clock at this point on climate, but what we can do is at least leave our kids the tools and the resources to adapt and do the best they can in a changing world. And so that's, I think, what many of us here in this valley are here doing.
Exactly. Why did you choose to become the director of the Independence Pass Foundation, a nonprofit that has quite a legacy?
Maybe the better question is, why wouldn't I?
Well, there you go. That sounds like it. Let's just change it to, why wouldn't you then?
It is, you know, as someone who loves the alpine environment, I really need to give a huge amount of credit to those who came before me, Bob Lewis, our founder, and Mark Fuller and Judy Olison, who ran the Independence Pass Foundation so skillfully for more than 20 years.
Right.
They created such an amazing foundation for me to step in and continue their work. So, as someone who loves the alpine, who loves wildflowers, who loves working with people on trail and other projects, it's really a dream job. And the other thing I absolutely would be remiss if I didn't say was, I also have the best board of directors in the valley. My 14 members are so engaged. They have an incredible array of skills. A couple of them, King Woodward and James Peterson, have been on the board since the beginning, which now is 30 years ago.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, yeah, they are amazing fonts of historical knowledge and perspective. So it's been a great 4 years, and I look forward to many more.
All right. I remember standing with Bob Lewis looking at segments of the old highway and thinking about, at that time when I worked for the Forest Service, to try to have a trail that went all the way to Independence Pass, and that didn't happen, but it was really good to know him when he was alive. And then Mark, I've worked with Mark before too, so good luck in continuing doing what you do and what Independence Pass Foundation does. Great organization.
Well, thank you. It's a total privilege to work on behalf of that landscape is what I would say.
I would too. I couldn't agree more. You previously worked for, or as a development coordinator for Rainfork Outdoor Volunteers and David Hamilton, and were the co-founder and the legal director of Public Council of the Rockies. Did I get that right?
You did, yeah.
Did this work prepare you for what you do today, and if so, how?
You know, that's an interesting question. When I applied for the job of executive director of the Independence Pass Foundation a little over 4 years ago now, I started to put together a resume. And I remember in the past thinking, especially when I was raising kids before they were fully in school, sort of working at a variety of jobs, part-time jobs, little tasks and things. And I didn't really have any idea how they were all going to add up into anything. They just seemed like the right thing at the right time. For example, co-founding Public Council of the Rockies with my then partner, Tim McFlynn. I think both of us wanted to use our legal abilities to do some good, especially in the environmental area, and I think we did. Roaring Fork Outdoor Volunteers was a great chance to dip my feet in fundraising waters, which of course I use extensively now. But I also did other funny things like writing for Mountain Parent and the Aspen Times. I ran for Basalt Town Council and was elected and served there for 4 years. And I ran Harry Teague Architects, the business side of that architecture firm. So I got some experience running a business. And I had no idea how all those various skills were going to add up until I took this job. And what's fairly unique about the Independence Pass Foundation is it is a one employee organization, and I'm it. So
right.
You really do need quite a variety of skills. And that's what all this dabbling
right.
in the decades prior, I think, added up to. So
you're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs Program for Land's Sake. I'm Bill Kite, your host, and today we are privileged to have Karen Teague with us, the Executive Director of the Independence Pass Foundation. You once said, if Independence Pass were to have a mascot, it would be a pika. Tell us about your work with pikas and how that came about.
Well, they are awfully cute, those little rabbits with small ears. And Independence Pass is blessed to be home to many, many pikas, being an alpine environment that they seem to like. One of the wonderful serendipitous things about Independence Pass is the road that goes over it, and it makes it uniquely accessible to scientists and to people of all shapes, sizes, and colors. So studying pikas there is a natural, and we've partnered this past year with the Front Range Pika Project and Rocky Mountain Wild in helping them conduct a study throughout the White River National Forest of pikas, seeing how they're doing in response to climate change and other recreational or environmental impacts. So I've selected, yes, the pika as our mascot, and working with the Pika Project has been really fun and interesting. One of the things we do is we go out and we collect fresh scat from pikas, and within that scat there are hormones and indicators of whether or not the pikas are under stress.
Amazing.
So that's one of the things they're studying. Anecdotally, it seems like the pikas are doing quite well up the pass, but that's anecdotal. So I'm delighted to know there are organizations who are working on this a little bit more scientifically.
Right.
Yeah.
I've heard that if pikas, if the temperature is increased by a couple of degrees, that they will really cease to exist because they won't really have that ecotone where they live.
And that's certainly proven to be the case in some locations in the Sierra Nevadas. There have been populations that have gone extinct. There, the population in Great Basin National Park has disappeared. Wow. So there's been a lot of concern regarding that. That being said, pikas, you know, I tend to give more credit to critters than sometimes right. we humans right. might. And pikas do seem able to, and I'm sure you've witnessed this yourself, we talk about them as if they're an alpine species, but we will see them quite a bit lower than that. They seem to find little microclimates where they can stay cool and stay under the rocks. Interestingly, what's most important for a pika is not staying warm during the long, cold winter, but is keeping cool in the summer when their little bodies are running around and furiously collecting grass and wildflowers for the long winter season. And they run so hot that it's a warm summer that's actually the biggest threat to their survival. And from what I've seen, we seem to have plenty of pikas finding their niches up on the pass, and certainly hope that will continue to be the case.
All right.
Yeah.
We have something in common, that the fact that you worked on the Exxon Valdez oil spill in 1989 as a lawyer for Exxon.
Well, you weren't supposed to say that.
well, we're just for the
just
sake of clarity.
Just talking here.
Yeah, just talking here. And I worked on the National Type 1 Management Team, incident management team that was assigned to help clean it up. And I had an amazing experience there in doing that, and I'm sure your experience was amazing too. So would you like to talk about that?
I guess I would.
Okay, good.
So you did get out to Prince William Sound and worked on the cleanup. Yeah, so you know what a spectacular and wild and woolly place that is. So my experience on the Exxon case, yes, and just to be clear, I did represent Exxon. I was a young lawyer, fairly fresh out of law school when I was assigned to that case. And, you know, you don't get to choose which cases you work on.
That's true.
But what I would say is it was one of the great experiences of my young lawyerly life. For one thing, being able to be in the courtroom every day during the trial was pretty thrilling. I was absolutely besotted by the beauty and wildness and grandeur of Alaska. Even though we were based in Anchorage, which any real Alaskan will say Anchorage is not Alaska.
Right.
But that being said, you know, it's 250,000 people, good Lord. But on a clear day, we could see Denali. There were icebergs in the bay. The flying in and out of Anchorage over the Chugach Mountains make our little wilderness areas here seem like a little fairyland. Pretty small. But what I would, you know, what I'd mostly like to say about, well, two things. Number one, it is absolutely what encouraged me to move out to the Colorado Rocky Mountains after living in Alaska for a spell. Going back to LA full time didn't seem like a real option. The other thing I would say about the Exxon case is I think, as in all of life and with all people, there was a lot of good and a lot of greed on both sides of the aisle. I worked with some folks at Exxon who were so dedicated to and passionate about doing the best they could on that cleanup. And I don't mean to minimize the breadth of the disaster it was, but there were some really good people on that team who I think did their best in the light of this. And so I have respect for those folks. And it is also great to be here now working on the other side.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you are on the other side now. Thank you so much for what you do. One of the things I noticed when we were there, that just the fluctuation of the tides, trying to put booms in the bays to keep the oil from getting to the shore was quite a challenge for that reason. And it was unpredictable weather sometimes. It was quite an amazing experience for me as well. And I'll never forget being there for trying to do some good.
Yeah, and I would I would second that and say one of the, interestingly, the part of the case I worked on the state trial, which was a damages case, and I worked on the oiling team, we were called.
Okay.
And so we worked with folks who were mapping the existence or the extent of the oil along the shorelines in Prince William Sound. And so we took quite a few trips out to see what still remained. This was probably 5 or 6 years after the spill.
Right.
And just as you say, in those areas in Prince William Sound where the tides and the weather were quite violent, most of those beaches cleaned up pretty well, pretty naturally.
That's what I understand. Yeah,
yeah, but that being said, and then in those more protected coves and areas, you could dig down a few inches and the shoreline was saturated with oil still. So you could see where Mother Nature was doing her job and cleaning it up, but there were, you know, the oil remained, and that was tough to see. Yeah.
And Mother Nature takes a lot more time than we realize as human beings to clean things up and to make changes.
Yeah, we're impatient.
Sure are, aren't we? You did quite a few projects last year for Independence Pass Foundation, did the Mountain Boy Restoration, Wilderness Protection, Tree and Wildflower Planting, Noxious Weed Eradication, Winter Gate Restoration, and something you did at Lost Man. I can't remember what it was. Do you want to talk about any of those? How much fun people have? So maybe some people volunteer next time you have a project.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, we did, in terms of Lost Man, we did some trail work there in partnership with Roaring Fork Outdoor Volunteers and Wilderness Workshop and, of course, the U.S. Forest Service. Lost Man Trail is one of our most popular in the whole valley and certainly up on the pass. It's also incredibly challenging because it is such a wet, high ecosystem. So in a good wet year, a lot of the trail will often be saturated or we'll find people trying to find ways to get around the water. And so we have lots of problems with braided trails and trampling of wetlands and alpine flowers. So we created kind of a walkway across to Lincoln's Lake and also redid a bridge across the Upper Roaring Fork, which is where Lost Man, I should say, a lot of people don't know this, but the headwaters of the Roaring Fork River is up Upper Lost Man at Independence Lake. And it's just a constant challenge to, first of all, figure out how to keep a bridge across it because it's right in an avalanche zone, but also to keep people from trampling the banks and looking for a way across. So we worked on that project, I think, very effectively with those terrific partners. The Mountain Boy Restoration Project was really the culmination of decades of work removing old snow fence from that wilderness area. Back in the 60s, the Forest Service had a dream about capturing snow with this fence that would then melt off more slowly throughout the summer season. About midway through construction, which took place all along the Continental Divide to the north and the south of the top of Independence Pass and then down into the Mountain Boy Basin, it was determined that the project wasn't going to work. And so all of the rebar, all of the slatting, all of the cable, everything that had been hauled up and installed was abandoned. So for many years now, the Independence Pass Foundation has had a dream of getting all of that debris out of the wilderness. And this year, and a lot of it we were able to do with helicopters.
Right. I was up there once when the helicopters were working. That was quite a project.
It was quite a project, and that was a great way to haul out, you know, the many tons of rebar. However, in Mountain Boy, which is designated wilderness, you are not allowed to bring helicopters. And so we have been just very slowly over the last few years working with kids, working with various volunteers, working with inmate work crews from Buena Vista. We've been slowly, slowly pulling the rebar out of the ground and hauling it out. And last year, we were fortunate enough to work with the Forest Service Mule Team in helping us carry a lot of that out. And we are now very, very close to having that project complete. So that's pretty exciting.
It's got to be because it did take so many years. And I know those prison crews, I've worked with them on fires, and they're hardworking folks. They've got something to work toward, don't they?
And if I can make a comment about that, because that is absolutely my favorite part of this job, is working with the inmate work crew. Every September, we are so fortunate to get a work crew that comes out every day of the week for the entire month of September and does, we could not accomplish half of what we do in a year without their hard work. And to work side by side with these young men who, despite their time in prison, still really have a lot of life and a lot of joy in them, and to get them outside and have them doing meaningful work, being acknowledged for it, being spoken to like human beings who matter. It's
exactly.
Really, it's
it's hard to describe, isn't it?
It's my favorite part of the job. What can I say? And that is not something I would have anticipated 4 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
When they're on a fire, they're treated just like any other fire crew, and they work very hard. And I like talking with them and getting to know them, because we all make mistakes. And they're trying to make a better life for themselves.
Absolutely. And I don't believe that their whole life should be marked just by that one, perhaps, mistake or worse. But I'd like to see them all get another chance. And you know, having seen them work on the fire crews, these are very strong, capable, competent people. And I just wish there were a way that when they got out of prison, we could figure out how to give them some of that meaningful work.
I agree. Yeah. I'm going to quote you on another interview that I looked at. You said, "Listen to the nudges. When the universe is tapping you on the shoulder, listen. There's something in those nudges that is meant for you." Could you please elucidate on that?
Are we talking current nudges or?
Sure. Like, what nudge do you feel right now that you're listening to at this time in your life?
I feel so fortunate at this time in my life to have work I love, to live in this place. I have two great teenagers, which is not an oxymoron, knock on wood. Really, at this point, all I want to do is what I'm doing better. I don't want to shift or change. I'll quote one of my favorite poets and philosophers, Rainer Maria Rilke. He says that love is the work for which all other love is mere preparation. And I deeply believe that. And what I guess my nudge from the universe right now is just to love my people and this place and my work better, more fully. At the end of the day, that's what we want to have done, right? Is to have loved well.
Absolutely.
So that's my current nudge.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I like to ask this question sometimes of the folks that come into the studio here for this show. If you had all the resources you need, money, influence, power, you name it, what would you like to accomplish?
Okay, I'm going to answer that on behalf of the Independence Pass Foundation.
I kind of thought that would be the case.
Yeah. Personally, I've got everything I want or need. But in terms of Independence Pass, I guess my ambition for that place and for our organization is that it really be seen as a geography of hope. I would like to see that landscape revered by our community and by our society in a way that, to the degree where no one would consider throwing trash out their car window or consider trampling alpine plants or consider lighting a campfire in a year of severe drought. And in terms of the organization, I think we can be a model for other organizations throughout the country in terms of being a friends group to the Forest Service or other public lands management managers who are just at this point pitifully, shamefully underfunded.
Isn't that true?
Yeah, and to the extent that private citizens can band together and help and be stewards and take care of this legacy for our kids. That's what I would like to see.
How do we get more people to get there? That's always my question.
Well, and then you get into that question of doing that dance between getting people out and experiencing a landscape so that they fall in love with it and want to take care of it, but also not loving it to death. And that's right. That's certainly where we are at the Independence Pass Foundation. That's where a lot of organizations and land managers are in terms of trying to find that balance.
It's really hard.
It's really hard, but I think you get kids out, we get them out planting trees and hopefully plant the seeds of being good stewards and being lovers of the land early. And just, again, modeling stewardship and care for a place by doing what we do and which we've done for 30 years now.
And you've done one heck of a job. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you for listening to KDNK. Our next show is April the 9th at 4:30. And until then, whatever you do to Mother Nature, do it for land's sake.